Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Duluth Rundown, a podcast focused on the local Twin Ports running scene. My name is Tony Stensland with Tony Stensland Coaching.
And I am Mike Ward with Duluth Timing and Events.
And we are back. Welcome, everyone, to the Duluth Rundown podcast, episode number 13.
Lucky number 13.
That's right, yeah. I can't believe how many it just keeps adding on. I always checked, what number are we on? Oh, wow, 13 already? Yeah, we're pretty excited. We've got, later on in the podcast, we've got Andy and Kim Holak talk about some of their running experiences, and many of you people know that they put on some of the best races, trail races in the Midwest, with their Wild Duluth series and now their Winter Trail series that they've got going. We're recording this on Monday the 16th, and just a couple of days ago they had the first race of that series in Chester Park, with another one coming up in January 4th in Leicester. And so we'll talk to them about that stuff, and we'll talk about some of our other kind of more traditional Duluth Rundown topics with fewer races to talk about this time, is because it's that time of the year.
Yeah, so it's a little bit brief. Should we jump right into results here?
Let's do it.
Cool. So first on the list, Gobble Gallop 5K, won by Kevin Koski with a very quick 15:52 on kind of challenging conditions. I know it was pretty slick out there. Kind of slick, sloppy snow, and 15:52 is a pretty good time for those. So, about 30 seconds behind, Ben Cogger was second place for the guys, 16:25. And then Evan Walpole, 16:55 behind Ben. So some pretty fast times per usual for the Gobble Gallop 5K on Thanksgiving Day. On the ladies' side, the race was won by Helen Shuda from Northfield, Minnesota. 19:06 was the winning time. And tight race on the gals' side, Christy Nixon, 19:16, and then Keegan McAuliffe, 19:28. So always some fast times, top 320 minutes for the ladies. Next race, actually we have a surprising number of January races here, Tony. Jingle Bell Run was just 2 weeks after Gobble Gallop, and Christy Nixon, who got second place at Gobble Gallop, takes the overall win with a 20:55. And then right behind Christy Nixon, I presume her husband, Anthony Nixon, with a 20:55 as well. But Christy gets the win. Moving on, Chester Rim 5K, like Tony mentioned, was just 2 days ago as we record. Again, very snowy conditions. We've had a very snowy late fall, I should say, because it's not even winter yet. And so definitely some challenging deep snow conditions at Chester Park on the trails. Steven Sandberg wins it 28:45. And then Leslie Semler wins it for the women's side with a 33:13. So definitely not a 5K PR day for the Chester Rim 5K. And then on the same day, at almost the same time, was the inaugural Wild Santa Run at Wild State Cider here in Duluth, and that was won by Benjamin Welch with a 16:13. I'll put the little asterisk. Sorry, Ben. It was a 2.6-mile course from what I heard, so not a full 5K. Then Katie Benzinger wins the ladies' race with a 20:25. Both of those winning times, of course, in a Santa costume. And then moving on to upcoming races, I think we only have one, being the Northwoods Winter Trail Half Marathon and Full Marathon. And you can do either of those on snowshoes, which is on January 4th, 2020. So we're getting into a new decade. New decade of races.
That's right.
And Kim and Andy will talk about the Northwoods Winter Trail races and the whole Duluth winter trail running series later on in this episode. Another notable thing is that the there's a trail running film festival the day before, so get your packet, check out the film festival. Fun time for all.
Where's that at, Mike?
I don't know.
It's at Clive Iron.
It's at Clive.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
At Clive Iron.
Yeah.
So the night, that Friday the 3rd, is the film festival. I don't know. I guess I don't know how many films they have, but it's typically, I'd say, around 10
Yeah,
relatively shorter films with an intermission in between. So it's always a good time to see a lot of people that you probably know and watch some of those cool films, have a couple beers.
Yeah. I didn't go last year.
Okay, yeah, I was there.
I wish I did. Was it cool?
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
I'd like to go this year. Maybe we should have a booth or something.
Yeah, that's true. We can broadcast live.
Yeah. See, that's fun, and you know, if you're not racing the Northwoods, you know, come out, check it out. I think it's pretty cool. It's at that's at Leicester at the Amity Chalet there, and yeah, we're both racing. I'm doing the marathon.
Yep.
I'm non snowshoe,
and I'm doing the snowshoe half. So looking forward to that.
Yeah. So that's all the upcoming races that we have. So Tony, do you want to jump into kind of the trail report? What I'm into, Coach's Corner, kind of rolled into one.
Yeah. So do you have anything like just pure trail report wise that you?
I guess I would say get out there. You know, I think this time we've had a lot of snow. There's been plenty of opportunities for, you know, snowshoers and groomers and fat bikes to get out. And so I think now is a great time to explore the trails. You might want to have snowshoes as a backup because I guess I don't really have any, like, true experience on if people are post-holing or not. But regardless, if you have snowshoes, take them out. You know, every little bit helps to pack down the trails. And I think what we want to see eventually is just like this firm, you know, layer of snow that's not icy. It's kind of tacky. Oh, I just love it when the trails get to that like perfect firmness.
Yeah, know? It's funny. Like in the winter, once the trails are that way, they're far less technical than they are in the summertime.
Yeah.
It takes some time for that to happen, and some really good cold weather helps, and snowshoes do a really great job of creating that pressed down and wide base. The snowshoes have, you know, all that flotation and that surface area that's pushing down on the snow. So when you get a good snowshoe packed trail, it's not only firm and relatively flat, but it's also a little wider as well. So you get 2.5, maybe at best 3 feet, but probably 2 to 2.5 feet of width that's firm. And that's plenty to, once it's ready to roll, that's plenty to bike on and run on without snowshoes as well. But to go out there early on with snowshoes helps a ton. So even if you're just simply walking, if you just put snowshoes on, that'll help the trail. And I would almost argue at times that, let's just say if you're out there in just normal winter boots on a trail and you're sinking just a couple of inches, that's hard work too. People sometimes, I think, get a little freaked out about snowshoes and think, well, it's super hard because it's so heavy and all this. But I'd argue that at times it might be a little bit easier because of the flotation and because your foot isn't spinning in that soft snow. It's just, your foot alone is on a base. And so
kind of the cramp on to.
Yeah, you've got the cramp underneath to claw into the snow and everything. So you're not slipping and sliding all over the place and spinning as you're, you know, it's like walking on sand. You know, your foot gets really tired walking on sand. It's the same deal with like 2 or 3 inches of snow. So a snowshoe to me is the way to go. So, yeah.
Right. Plus, I always think if in my mind I'm like, it's too hard, I don't want to go snowshoeing. I just remember I read once that you can burn 1,000 calories per hour snowshoeing. And I'm like, all right, it's worth it.
Oh, man.
And then I'll eat the quad cheeseburger after.
Yeah, it's, you're, especially running, snowshoe running, your heart rate skyrockets. And basically, to me, anytime you snowshoe run, it's a workout every single time. It doesn't matter how fast you try to run or slow you try to run, your heart rate's going to be way up there. So you're getting a workout every single time. So it's a lot of fun to, and you're developing some strength too. So
big time.
Utilize snowshoe running as a training tool in the winter, I think is really beneficial.
Yeah.
Cool. I think a couple of things that I wanted to say in regards to that, just because I have been snowshoe running a ton lately, cause I'm training for that half and, looking forward to that. And the snowshoe running is a lot of fun here in town. I personally have been at Hartley and Leicester quite a bit. I'm told Bagley's is pretty good for snowshoe running right now. I haven't even considered Bagley for snowshoe running, but I'm sure it is pretty nice. And another good place to go at times, too, are the golf courses. I don't know if that's technically legal. I assume it's fine. I don't see what's going to hurt anything. If you do go to a golf course, chances are you're going to be breaking trail at first. But if you just kind of went back there, or if you got like a group of three or four or five people and you just kind of formed a conga line and created a path and you just took turns leading and breaking the trail, eventually you'd create a nice surface to just have, you know, whatever kind of course or route or whatever that you wanted. So golf courses are nice options at times that people often forget about. But I personally, like I say, I've been at Hartley and Leicester quite a bit and running on, you know, the Duluth Traverse, the snowmobile trails, the older Cogs trails that aren't the Duluth Traverse, you know, guardrail and root canal in Hartley, Old Hartley Road, Amity East, Amity West, the Duluth Traverse coming out of Leicester. And from what I've seen of the trails, most of them have been pretty good. There's been some days where it's been a little softer. The Traverse has been groomed. I think I checked the Cogs Twitter site and the Duluth Traverse has been groomed by the groomer, I think, four different times so far this winter. And I was out there today, and just today was probably the best day that I've seen it in terms of firmness. Mm-hmm. It's starting to finally set up pretty nicely. Some days are a little rougher than others when I've been out there because of everybody kind of post-holing a little bit as we get fresh snow and then it packs a little bit and then we get some more fresh snow and then it packs a little bit and then we get more fresh snow and it's that fresh snow that takes some time to settle in. And what I've noticed is just me personally when I've been out there is I know we talk a lot about, you know, the trail etiquette and don't do this kind of stuff, but the fact of the matter is people are going to go out on the trails and they are going to post hole them at times. We don't want that, of course, but it's going to happen. It happens in every single community. It's not just a Duluth thing, and it's always happened. I've been snowshoe running for 20 years, and this is just kind of how it's been in every trail that I've ever been to. And I realize so many times, like, it's such a big topic for us right now to make sure that we're not doing that. Make sure we're not post-holing. And that's true. But the other side of the coin that I realized when I was out there a couple of weeks ago is like, yeah, it's not fun when I have to, you know, your foot's spinning in there a little bit more than it would be if it was packed down with a nice snowshoe or the groomer. And it's, you know, it's all cratered up with different boots. But I don't have to necessarily be angry about it all the time either. I can just let my run happen and enjoy the outdoors because, mm-hmm. you know, we want people to be outdoors and active. And if they're outdoors and active in the wintertime, even better. I mean, that's an awesome thing. You know, America could use more of that kind of attitude. I think we've got such a, you know, we're such a, like, an unhealthy population as a whole.
Yeah.
And so anytime we can encourage people being out there on the trails, I think that's a good thing. Yes. We do want to educate people and here's why you don't do it. But, I just realized while I was out there that, boy, I can reframe this a little bit in my head and mm-hmm. and not be angry about it and just go enjoy my run. And then it wasn't long after that that I had one of those runs where I was like, okay, I'm just gonna not be so grumpy about it while I'm out here, that I came across an article or an idea. And the idea is that emotions last for 90 seconds. So when you're angry, the chemical kind of reaction that occurs for those chemicals to kind of flow through lasts no more than 90 seconds. And if you're, let's just say it's anger, is the emotion. So after 90 seconds, if something has made you angry, you've now decided to stay angry after 90 seconds. It's you've assigned stories to this thing that happened. You've placed some judgment value on that thing that happened after 90 seconds. And it's your choice then to continue to be angry. And I was thinking, like, boy, if I have that kind of control, then that kind of power, if that's really, really nice to know. That's an empowering thing to understand and know that, oh, okay, fine. If right away I'm a little upset about it, cool. Yeah. Let that 90 seconds just kind of go. Don't dwell on those emotions, and then it does it. It just, like, fades away. So I was reading a little bit. Let's see if I can find it here as I have it pulled up, about this idea. And I was reading from a quote from her name is Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor. She's a neuroanatomist, and basically she studies the brain and the nervous system. And she describes the 90-second rule as this, because she's kind of speaking in the first person here. So She says, once triggered, the chemical released by my brain surges through my body and I have a physiological experience. Within 90 seconds from the initial trigger, the chemical component of my anger has completely dissipated from my blood and my automatic response is over. If, however, I remain angry after those 90 seconds have passed, then it is because I have chosen to let that circuit continue to run. And that's what I truly found for me, too, that happened on the trail that day when I was out there. Is that, yeah, okay, cool. Let's just not be angry about it anymore. Right. Next thing I knew, I was just having another great run. It was a beautiful day out in Leicester, this blue sky. It was, you know, just peaceful out there in the winter trails. So that was, it was, like I say, it was a really empowering thing. So, and then what that then reminded me of was, this is slightly going off the track a little bit here, but this is just what happened with my thoughts as they were progressing. It reminded me of a scene from Northern Exposure. If anybody remembers Northern Exposure, it's my favorite TV show. One of my favorite episodes from that show was, it's called Northern Lights, season 4, episode 18, to be specific. And in that episode, there's a DJ named Bernard Stevens who is talking about a homeless person in the TV show, Lance, Corporal Lance Bristol, former Marine. And Lance Bristol, like I say, is a homeless man who's kind of come into Sicily, Alaska, where the town is, where the TV show is based out of. And Bernard is speaking about Lance Bristol, and he says something to the fact of, when he encounters Corporal Lance Bristol, he has this gut level response that, based on Corporal Bristol's appearance and just, you know, the fact that he's homeless just kind of makes him feel bad. And he says, I have a revulsion, an inner primal recoiling. And Bernard wonders kind of, where do these irrational thoughts come from? Why am I thinking this way? This man is no threat to me. He's just, you know, he's homeless. And so Bernard Stevens says, you know, I should respond with empathy and caring and consideration. He says, I'm working on it. And I, to me, that was like, that kind of really speaks to that whole idea that, you know, these emotions and these feelings pop up into us all the time. And we're all human. All these things, we get angry and we get a little sad or whatever. But we have the work to do to figure out, are these feelings, are they rational? Is there anything that I can do about it? Am I just a victim to these emotions and I have no control over it? Or can I have some control over it and make my situation a little bit better? And so what I'm getting at is, like, as I was out there that day, and I know we talk about all the trail stuff and don't post hole and all this kind of stuff, the trail users, we can also just not get all bent out of shape about it all the time either, and just enjoy our time out on the trail, because it doesn't have to be pristine conditions to be an enjoyable trail run or bike ride or whatever.
Yeah,
so anyway, that's where I was at. And just something to think about, you know, like I say, obviously we all want better trail conditions, but let's just not let that, if it's not perfect, let's not let it ruin our day.
Right, and we all want to be like good stewards, you know, and everyone, I think, you know, especially like the trail runners, you know, and people who are really, I think, emotionally invested, let's say, in the trails, like me, you know, like I love the Superior Hiking Trail, you know, like that sort of emotional attachment,
right, yeah,
right, to the trail, you know. So then you hear like, don't do this, don't walk around the mud hole, walk right through, mm-hmm, right? And so you get these things in your mind, and then when you see the footprints that go around, I mean, I've done it before, or like the dog, yeah, off leash, right? Yeah. Like, you know that you're not supposed to have your dog off leash, so when you see the dog off leash, yeah, you totally get triggered. I mean, it's not just the post-holing, it's, you know, and so
that anger arises, yeah, no matter what. In fact, it's funny that you say the dog off leash, because that absolutely happened to, oh, me, yeah, today at Leicester on the on the DT. Two people, mm-hmm, were riding their bikes. And the DT was great, and it was really firm. And then they had a dog who was off leash, and the dog comes running at me, and the dog is kind of all over the place, and they're yelling at the dog. And the exact same thing happened to me. I was angry.
Get angry.
You know, I was so angry, I didn't even say hello to them. That's how angry I was. Normally, I'm just like, hey, how are you? And I was like, oh, you. So, but 90 seconds later, I was like, having another good run. You know, yeah, it was awesome. So, yeah.
Like, what can you really do?
What can I do? What can I do? You know, I can choose to be angry, or I can choose not to be angry.
It's just funny how, you know, kind of the, I'll say like the PR push to, you know, be a better trail steward for everyone, you know,
yeah.
comes and more like, do this, don't do that. And then you get that in your mind,
right.
and then you see it, and yep. you get mad. So it is funny how that, you know, on one side of the coin,
yeah.
you know, there's more of this PR push, if you will. That's maybe the wrong term, but to just be better, which is good, yep. positive.
It is
but
a good thing.
On the flip side, you know, you get more angry,
right?
which is not good. So
I'm not trying weird. To say it's wrong to, you know, want our trails yeah. in great conditions. Of course that's correct.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is let's take a step back at times if right. we're constantly upset about it and just say, whoa, I don't need,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah, doesn't make you feel good.
Who wants to be angry all the time?
Yeah. Or to come across as like a major snob.
Right.
You know?
Right.
That's
yeah.
the other part. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Or, yeah. you know, the trail Nazis, as they get called sometimes,
right,
you know,
right.
like yeah, just maybe just back it off a little bit.
Yeah,
yeah.
totally.
Anyway, that's kind of what I got. That's kind of my trails report / coach's corner / what I'm into.
You've been having some really zen experiences, like out there snowshoe running.
You know, honestly, those. I don't know about you, Mike, or you guys listening. Those kinds of things happen all the time when I'm on a run. I just now I have a podcast, so I'll talk about them a little bit more often, I guess.
Yeah. Nice. Well. Yeah, should we keep moving here? Gear review, you got any gear review?
No, but I know you do, and I'm really excited to hear what you have to say because I've taken a peek at these things, and they're pretty sweet.
Yeah, okay, so my gear review is a pair of skis, actually. They're called the Altai Hawk, Altaihok. H-O-K, pronounced like a hawk that flies, obviously. Anyways, so I've been planning this trip to the Boundary Waters, and I want to do like a winter backpacking trip, a winter camping deal. And so I was researching, you know, the best method for lake travel. And I stumbled across this particular brand of skis, which are like a backcountry ski. So I think they're designed to like skin up a mountain and ski back down. And I'm not a skier at all, downhill or Nordic. I've Nordic skied one time. But these came up repeatedly in forums and just on the internet as like the best option for lake travel. And so I just kind of got a little crazy and just bought them. And yeah, they're super fun for lake travel for sure, but I've really enjoyed them on the Superior Hiking Trail. And in the deep snow, they work so good.
And describe the skis, too, so for people who haven't...
Yeah, so I really describe them just like the most plain and simple is you take the best elements of a snowshoe and the best elements of a cross-country ski, although I'm not a skier, so I'm just kind of assuming, but you take kind of the best elements and put them together, and it's this. Mm-hmm. So they're really wide. They have a universal binding, which means that you can put any shoe or boot in there, mm-hmm. and they have a built-in skin. And yeah, like waxless metal edges, and they're 125 centimeters
yep,
long, so pretty short and stubby.
Yeah, 125. And talk about what a skin is. I bet not everybody understands what a skin is.
Yeah, it's like this hair on the bottom, and these I don't know if like all skins I know they have like attachable, detachable
yep.
ones. These are like built in. It's just like a hair that's mm-hmm. like kind of at an angle, essentially, so you can glide forward and then your foot kind of sticks on the other side, so you can essentially like push forward.
When it reminds me of the ones that you have, because you showed me that one day,
mm-hmm,
is
mm-hmm.
the like when you're those little lint removers for your clothes,
yeah,
you can only brush them like one direction,
right,
and they'll pull off the lint, and if you brush it the other direction it won't,
right,
it's kind of like that.
Yeah exactly. Yeah.
Little fibers.
Yeah, so they've been super fun because, like, snowshoes, like we mentioned, is hard work. You have to pull up your foot and put it down. skis are long and cumbersome. Like, I would never think of going on the Superior Hiking Trail on a big, long pair of Nordic skis.
Right.
Well, you kind of get the best of both worlds, like I said, because you get really good flotation, which is cool. They're pretty maneuverable.
Mm-hmm.
But then instead of lifting your foot up and over like a snowshoe, you just kind of scoot it forward. You can kind of get in this, like, classic skiing kind of type motion, I think, like in 2 feet of powder on this SHT.
Yeah.
And so that's been really fun. The lake has been pretty fun as well, which, you know, I haven't really explored the lakes a little bit. I've done kind of some like just deep snowshoe trail running type stuff on frozen lakes, but That's been fun, except the slush is a whole different topic for a different conversation. But that's been tough. But anyways, I saw locally a very similar brand or model from Black Diamond at Trail Fitters called the Glide Light. And so I definitely recommend checking those out. I think this sort of style is going to be the new trend because I've never really seen anything or heard anything like this, maybe like here and there, you know, but wow, it's super fun.
It does look pretty cool. After I saw yours the other day when we ran, I looked, there's some YouTube videos of the Alti one specifically that I looked at, and yeah, they look pretty cool. It's another cool way to get out and enjoy the winter, whether you're biking, skiing, snowshoeing, and now you've got whatever this thing is called, the Hawk
fat skis.
Skis.
I call them like fat skis.
Short fat skis.
Short fat
kinda,
skis.
Kind of deal. It's a little different than what I think of classic backcountry skiing, where it's those tend to be a little more closer to a downhill ski. This is a ski, but different than anything I've ever seen, for sure.
I mean, it's just as close to a snowshoe as a ski, really.
It really is. You
know?
Yeah.
And especially just how they feel on your foot. You know, they feel like a snowshoe.
Yeah.
But then...
It's got a free heel, so your heel comes up. It's
right.
The heel's not locked into the binding.
The binding's attached at the toe.
Yep.
But I will say you have more control, like on downhills... For sure, with the snowshoe, because with the crampon, whereas there's a few downhills where it's like, ooh, okay. But then the powder's deep enough where you can kind of just like, but if it's tracked out like on a groomed, firm, you know, fat bike trail, for instance, you could go really fast for sure, and it would be a little freaky on the downhills.
Have you taken them to any of those trails and parks in town?
Well, I went actually the last two weekends, because 2 weekends ago it was so fun that I went back yesterday to the Lake County Demonstration Forest, which is a trailhead on the Superior Hiking Trail, pretty close to Two Harbors, essentially, but it's way inland.
Yeah, off the Drummond Grade, right?
Yeah, off the Drummond Grade. And so they groom fat bike and ski trails, and there's the CJ Ramstad North Shore State Trail.
Yep.
Yeah, that's right.
The snowmobile trail.
Yeah. All kind of conglomerate in that one area. So anyways, to get to the SHT, you kind of go through these other trails. So yes, I was on kind of the groom stuff, and it goes much, much, much faster for sure.
Yeah.
But it's almost like I fell more because you're not, you know, you... Like skiing, I'm not a skier, right?
Yeah.
So I'm my technique is crap. I don't feel balanced on them, and I can't get an edge, and they're kind of wide to get an edge too.
Sure.
So that's honestly, I think, more challenging, but you can definitely go a lot faster than the powder. But especially if like you're looking for a snowshoe or you're looking for a new kind of winter toy, I would highly, highly recommend taking a look at these sort of fat, skinny, or not fat, short ski things, like either the Black Diamond or the Alti.
Yeah.
Really
so
fun.
after I saw yours, and I was thinking about it some more, and like I said, I was doing some of the research and stuff, I started to wonder, how would it work if you did Arrowhead in those? Would you be in the ski division, or would you be in the foot division? I bet it would be the ski division, and
ski,
I think that would be
it
would be a pretty good Arrowhead choice, actually, as long as, I mean, let's just say if you're a weak skier, if you're a strong skier, then just ski it with normal skater classic skis. But if you're not a strong skier, and I say that partially because the last year I was in Arrowhead, I saw at least one, if not two people doing more classic backcountry skis with it. But not skating. No, they were kind of just walking sort of in the classic style, but they were wider skis like that. But they were longer than yours. They were more classic backcountry
right.
skis.
Yeah.
I'd say they're borderline twice as long as yours almost.
Right.
But if you were, say, for instance, not a strong skier and you wanted to do Arrowhead on skis to get your atois or whatever, all three disciplines, I bet you could do that and it would work.
Yeah. It probably makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they look like skis, but they're like, then you look closer, you're like, wow, those are really short.
Yeah.
And really fat.
Yeah.
Wide. You know?
Yeah.
And the binding's weird.
Yeah. And there's a skin on it, which normally you don't use in a flatter situation.
Super
like
fun,
this.
Though. I've really enjoyed these, like, totally worth every penny.
They
you know,
do
$350
look cool.
bucks, they're not really, they don't really break the bank either. And
you
don't need, like, specialty boots. Like, I've really had luck with using a high top Ultra Lone Peak the winter style. So yeah. It's like Gore-Tex style, waterproof, and a high top.
Yeah.
That works so good. That'd like be perfect. It's a lightweight shoe,
yeah.
Running shoe.
As long as that wide toe fits in the binding fine, that would be fine.
Yeah. That's my gear review.
Nice. Yeah, that's a cool thing.
Yeah. I think we had the same shout out that we were planning on, so you can go ahead and shout out.
Yeah, quick shout out to my buddy Dave Schuneman, who finished Hitchcock, 2 days ago now?
Yeah.
Today's Monday. Yeah, so congrats to Dave for yet another one in the books.
Yeah, I feel like we always do shout outs for Dave, but I mean, he's done that now 200s in what, 2 months? So
something like that, yeah.
Yeah, nice work, Schuneman.
It must be nice to always be in 100 mile shape.
Yeah. Well, next up, Gnarly Bandit, huh?
Yeah.
Maybe. Dave?
Yeah. You should think about that.
Well, I think that's all we got for the regular rundown, and I know we have a long interview, so let's get to Kim and Andy.